Hey, this is Rabbi Baruch Halevi, Rabbi B, or just B. Welcome to the Soul Centered Podcast. Delighted that you took the time to tune in and have a conversation about the afternoon of life. Everything that we're doing at Soul Centered revolves around the afternoon of life. The afternoon of life is an idea taken from Carl Jung, the great psychologist, psychotherapist, and it's the idea that in the afternoon of life, we have certain goals, rules, and tools, and they're very different, or at least they should be very different than the morning of life. We'll say somewhere around 40 years old, according to Jung, and my experience having made the journey and now counseling people through midlife and into the afternoon of life, they're different phases, right? And they're nuanced phases within each of those. However, they're very distinct phases, and the morning and the afternoon of life need to be distinct. The problem is that we carry the morning goals, rules, and tools with us into the afternoon. We try and apply them to our life in the afternoon, and then we wonder why we're frustrated, we're feeling empty or adrift, or worse yet, right? We're causing havoc, wreaking havoc, causing destruction in our lives or the lives of the people around us, the people we love. Sometimes it's intentional. More often than not, in my experience personally and guiding people professionally, it's not intentional. We just haven't been taught these things. We haven't thought about these things. Almost every client I work with, we have the conversation about the afternoon of life, and there's this like light bulb. I never thought about it. I never prepared for it. Nobody told me about it. Where do you go to learn about it? And so I've made my life into a study of the shift, as my teacher, Dr. Wayne Dyer, who talks a lot about the morning and the afternoon, and he wrote a book called The Shift, talks about the shift from the morning to the afternoon, to do it consciously and constructively, and with the help and resources of other people. We have to be able to turn to other people in these times to give us wisdom that we couldn't possibly have gathered on our own, to give us guidance, to be objective. It's hard to be objective about our own life, no matter whether or not you're an expert or not in your particular area, right? Only a fool hires himself as his own lawyer, if he's a lawyer or she's a lawyer. So you need people outside of yourself to guide you. And that's what that's what Soul Centered is all about. That's what my work is about. And Ariella works with her clients. Ariella is my wife and co-founder of Soul Centered. She works with her clients, and we're starting to work with clients together. So this is about tools. This particular conversation is about the tools that we need in the afternoon of life. We need tools in all aspects of our life. Tools have been a part of Homo sapiens' lives for over, I think I read, for 2.5 million years. The first tools were about eating, right? Primitive knives used as, you know, stones. And they've evolved over time, but they've allowed us to evolve, right? To have things outside of ourselves as resources to be able to move forward in our lives in ways that we just couldn't, we can't. Left to our own resources and devices. And so we need tools. And that's what Ariella and I do, is work with clients, you know, as counselors, therapists, but also coaches. And for me, the distinguishing feature and factor is, you know, where counseling and therapy cross over into coaching is when we start getting into practical tools and start focusing on implementing those tools. And it's all semantics at some level, but it's very important for me to bring coaching into my therapeutic relationship with my clients so that they can have practical, real tools for practical, real challenges. This is about a particular tool that I have come to call Name It, Face It, Fix It. And it's a cute little title. It just helps me remember the concepts. The concepts, maybe they're cute, maybe they're not so cute, I don't know, but they're effective. And they're always in this formula for me and my experience in guiding other people. And it's not an insignificant tool, Name It, Face It, Fix It. It is a tool that I utilized to get me through the hell of surviving the loss of my father My father died, as I've mentioned many times elsewhere. You can read my book, Spark Seekers: Mourning with Meaning, Living with Light, where I talk in depth about my father's suicide. He died by suicide, completed suicide 16 years ago. My grandmother completed suicide 30-ish years ago. And my father didn't have these tools. I wish he did. I believe he'd be alive. You know, it's not so simple to say if he had this, he'd be alive. But it's certainly if he embodied the concepts in this particular tool, name it, face it, fix it, I do believe he would be here today. But he's not. So I've become a spark seeker. And that's another podcast for another time. But I've gone into the darkness and I found the blessings, the possibilities, the meaning that's always within the darkness. And that's what I want to talk about in Name It, Face It, Fix It. So I gave this talk recently to the Metro Area Suicide Prevention Coalition. It is an amazing organization in Omaha, Nebraska, sponsored by the Kim Foundation. I gave it because I'm connected to Omaha. I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska, and that's where my father was born and raised. My grandmother took her life there. My father wasn't there when he left this world, but he was there most of his life, and I was there up until I went to college. I feel deeply connected and committed to Omaha, and so they invited me in to talk about my personal journey through surviving loss by suicide. That's not what I'm going to talk about, but I'm going to talk about this tool. And the reason why it's so important is because it brings light to darkness. Darkness descends in our lives. There's no way around it. You're not getting out of this life without all kinds of darkness descending, not just the darkness of the death of a loved one. I call them the dark D's: divorce, depression, death, disease. I got a lot more. I don't have them written in front of me, but they don't have to start with D in order to bring darkness, but you get the point, right? And these moments of darkness descend in our lives. One of the reasons why I love the afternoon of life and work with folks in the afternoon of life is because the darkness is inescapable at that point. You can get through the morning of life, certainly not escaping the darkness, but not having to look at it, not to face it. You can't get to or through the afternoon of life 40 onwards without having it descend into your life probably multiple times, quite often. Always going through some particular darkness, you know, it might be the death of a friend and then another loved one. And then you're dealing with a diagnosis of sorts, or, I mean, the list goes on and on. So we're always at some level dealing with the darkness. Now, it's not about living in the darkness. Absolutely not. It's about facing the darkness, which we'll get to, but you can't face something until you talk about it. And that's where I believe my father, my family's demise began. You know, in our home, growing up, we did not talk about the darkness of any of the dark deeds. It was off limits in every area. My grandmother struggled with depression as far back as I can remember. When she killed herself, I was 15 and a half years old, but I never remember her as anything other than depressed. Now, we didn't call it that, and I couldn't name it as such, but that's what she was. She was depressed. She was clinically diagnosed about it. We just didn't talk about it. She'd gone through years of electroshock treatment, very different than the type you would go through today. She was on a combination, a cocktail of all kinds of medications. I'm sure not the medications that we would prescribe today. She was an empty shell in many ways. I remember that, seeing in her eyes this emptiness, being around her, feeling an emptiness. So when she killed herself, 1986, I believe it was. It wasn't her anymore, but we weren't allowed to talk about any of that. And I just remember feeling like we were enshrouded in a dark, destructive silence. Certainly when she killed herself, there was no talking about it. It was off limits. Lots of things were off limits. You couldn't talk about that. You couldn't talk about the fact that most of my aunts and uncles, and later on, almost all of them, my parents, divorced. Didn't talk about it. Didn't talk about sexuality. Cousins who were gay are gay, but it was off limits. I remember my grandfather shushing me because I brought it up, one of my cousins who was gay, and I just remember him shutting it down. And that's how it was. But if you can't name it, they say in the self-help and recovery world, you can't tame it. You give it power or you lose your power. You know, one of the things I'm all about is reclaiming our power, taking back our power. And that comes through taking it back from the silence, the devastating, destructive silence that that Jean-Jacques Rousseau talks about. He has a quote that I love. It says, "Absolute silence leads to absolute sorrow. It is the image of death." Absolute silence leads to an absolute sorrow, a suffocation, a devastation. If you can't name it, you can't tame it. And it has power over you. So the starting point with whatever dark D you're dealing with is to bring your voice, to take back your voice, to take the power away from the darkness, from the silence. In Hebrew, a word is not just some enigmatic thing. The Hebrew word for word, devar, is a thing. It's a vessel. It's a vehicle. Words are things. You know, you can't be held guilty for a crime if you just think about it. But the moment you verbalize it, you've left the realm of abstractions, right? It doesn't mean that thoughts aren't potential things and they don't manifest and grow into things. But when they start where they are, they're still not things. They're waiting to be brought into this world, but they need a vessel, a vehicle, and a word becomes a vessel or a vehicle for the idea to enter this world. And you can be held accountable for your words, right? Hate speech. At that moment, you've crossed from abstraction to the concrete. You can be held accountable for a crime. Certainly, you can be held accountable for your actions if it's just quote-unquote, verbal abuse is a thing. It's real. I'd argue that it's probably the most destructive and devastating. I wouldn't say the most. That's an overstatement. I would say it is as destructive and devastating as a lot of physical abuses. And how do we know this? Because you carry the wounds of those words that were destructive, that were put upon you, right? Unleashed against you a decade later, a quarter century later, half century later, more. I remember the hurtful words on playgrounds 40 plus years ago. You remember that stupid child's nursery, not nursery rhyme, but saying, "Sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never hurt me." Really? This is a podcast, so I can say whatever I want. Bullshit. Right? Bullshit. Sticks and stones can only break your bones. Words will destroy people, can destroy, have destroyed people. How many wounds do we have that are from words versus from sticks and stones? It's incomparable. The people I guide, it's about letting go of many of those destructive words from the past. So words are real. Words are things. I'll do a whole other podcast another time on words and looking at Moses being put into a basket. That basket in Hebrew is called a teva. It's another name for word. Noah being put into the ark. Teva is called an ark in English. We translate it as ark, but it's a word. The role of words and speech and the salvation of those realities, not necessarily literal stories, but figurative for sure, about the destructive power of communication or the absence of constructive communication and the power of words, speech to find redemption. So you got to name it, right? As the starting point, taking back your power. Words are powerful. I looked at my Christian brothers and sisters and your New Testament, the Gospel of John. It says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." God is the Word. The Word is God. It's divinity, this ability to speak, speech. Sometimes it's literal words. Sometimes it's communication at a much deeper level. You don't have to communicate with words only. In fact, oftentimes we communicate more powerfully through other ways, not just through words, through our actions, through our body language, all kinds of ways to communicate. Another conversation for another day. I'm going to say that, by the way, a lot on podcasts, because there's so many good conversations, soul-centered conversations. We're going to have them. Just can't have them all at once. I've learned as a rabbi, giving hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of sermons, give one good sermon, not two mediocre ones. So coming back to this, dealing with the darkness, the formula, the tool of name it, face it, fix it. There's great power in words, and that's the starting point. To be able to talk about the darkness, whatever darkness you're going through, and to start to give it a name, to start to give it voice, and taking back your voice. I'm reminded of one of the Psalms, says, Lo hametim tahalelia, velo kol yorde duma. I can't remember which Psalm it is. I have that one memorized. I don't have a lot of them memorized, actually. That one means the dead cannot praise you, and neither can those who go down in silence. I know this one because I've said it over and over, and I said it really out loud for the first time in front of a congregation of, I think it was 1,000+ people on Yom Kippur right after my father killed himself. And I said, I will not be silent. By the way, this came after somebody said to me, Rabbi, you're blogging a lot about your father's suicide, and you should just know, you're new here to New England. I was new. My third pulpit, but my first high holidays in this third pulpit in Swampscott, Massachusetts. And this person said, we don't talk about suicide in New England. And I said, that's nice. And I got up on Yom Kippur and I said, my father killed himself, right? And we're going to talk about it so that we can do something about the epidemic of suicide. And it's an epidemic, not the least of which reasons we don't talk about it. So I will not go down in silence, and we will not go down in silence. And you, my dear soul-seeking brother and sister who are listening to this, don't go down in silence. Give voice to the darkness. Take back your power from the darkness by speaking about the darkness. Name it. Number two, tame it. What does that mean, to tame it? Sorry, you got to name it, to tame it. Face the darkness. Number two, what does it mean to face the darkness? You know, believe it or not, and I don't think it's surprising, actually, if you think about it, we don't face the darkness. In so many ways, we don't want to face the darkness. What does that mean, we don't face the darkness? Well, a teacher of mine once said, you know, avoidance is a great word. I love words. We're going to get into words in this podcast. Avoidance, avoidance. What do we do when the darkness descends into our lives? We want to avoid it. Right, so what do? We dance around it, avoidance. We dance and dance and dance around the void that is at the center of our lives. When you're dealing with divorce or disease or death or depression or things that don't start with D, and they're painful and they're difficult and they're ugly and they're dark, our natural response, the primal response, is to dance. To do the void dance. And we do the void dance in 1,000 ways. Some of them are illicit and unacceptable, right? Illicit drugs, turning to drugs is a void dance, and hurting ourselves, right? All kinds of explicit ways where we hurt ourselves. We know that those are problematic, if not outright wrong. But then there are these the more complicated void dances, which are socially acceptable, like shopping and eating and television, right? Television is a massive void dance. You can destroy your life by television. Now, is it going to kill you watching too much TV? No, but it will slowly destroy your relationships. If you spend more time on Netflix than you do talking to your spouse, I guarantee you, even if you don't end up divorced, your relationship will be a corpse. It'll be there physically, but there won't be any spirit in it animating it. And I've seen over and over and over again, Netflix destroy relationships between children and parents and spouses and so on and so forth. So we've got to be mindful of how are we doing the void dance, avoiding it? How are we not facing the darkness when it descends into our lives? Over and over again, I help people realize that they're doing the void dance. And if they want to move through the darkness, they got to name it. They got to face it. It's hard. It's hard to face the darkness. Great mystical teaching comes from the Sufi tradition, I believe, where a Sufi master is walking along and sees a man kind of scouring through the bushes looking for something. He says, then what are you looking for? Looking for my keys. Why are you looking under this street lamp here? Is this where you lost them? No, this is not where I lost my Like he's the man says, well, where did you lose them? I lost them over there in the field where it's dark. Well, why aren't you looking over there? Because this is where the light is, the man says. It's true. I find myself kind of going towards the things I know, right? The light in my life to find the answers when I know good and well that the answer to this particular issue is in the darkness, because that's where the problem began. That's where the devastation took place. That's where my pain lies. And so it's about going into the darkness to find the answers. And we'll have a whole conversation, another conversation for another day on meeting the divine in the darkness. But for now, it's enough to face the darkness and to know that it's part of the formula. Name it and face it, and you will discover the sparks within the darkness. And there are always sparks within the darkness. We're going to talk about shattering another time. The Kabbalistic idea that shattering is part of life, and it is a necessary part of life, and there are answers when shatterings come into our lives, all kinds of shatterings that the dark deeds, the darkness brings into our lives. But in that moment, we have to make a decision to face the darkness, to become a spark seeker, to seek those sparks of possibility that are waiting for us within the darkness. So name it and face it and replace it. Replace it. I can't say it strongly enough. I've done probably 500 funerals as a rabbi, and I'd say at 490 of them, I don't know how many, but I've used the following statement that was shared with me teaching. A person dies two deaths, once when their body dies and once when their story dies, and there is nothing you can do about your or your loved one's body. You can stave off death for a while until you can't, but eventually, right, as we all know, we're all going to die, and our loved ones are going to die. And when that time comes, there's nothing you can do about it once they are dead. But there is something you can do about their story. You become a guardian of their story. We can defy death by keeping that story alive. We become a guardian of the story, a guardian of their spark, of their flame, of their essence. Right? And we, as I say a lot, we carry that fire forward in a thousand ways. Another conversation for another day about how to become a guardian of the flame and carry their fire. But that's a purpose, right? And I see it every single time after the death of somebody, and I share with them this idea. It's not mine. It's a truth, though. It's for everybody. All times, all traditions, doesn't matter. What does it do? It gives us a purpose out of the loss. It doesn't replace the loss, but it replaces our experience, our purpose for ourselves in the loss. It doesn't replace the person. Can't say it strongly enough. Not about replacing your dog that you'd loved and who died with a new puppy, right? I discourage that deeply. There will come a time when you owe it to your beloved dog to, if it's what's calling you, to go out and bring another dog into your life and love that dog completely. Not to replace your beloved dead dog, but to continue the love, right? So to make sure that love doesn't die. The same is true with our loved ones who are human, not just animals. Same is true with every loss. It isn't about replacing the loss. It's about continuing life, continuing love so that we don't die with that person or with the thing that was lost. And finding something bigger to come out of it. How many wonderful contributions in this world have come because somebody has lost something? I think of, you know, the founder of Mothers Against Drunk Driving, Matt. Right? She lost her daughter, I believe it was. And out of that, she committed to making sure that under her watch, she would do everything she could to make sure others didn't lose their children to drunk driving. So many stories of that doesn't bring back her daughter, but it does bring meaning to the loss and meaning and purpose to her life. You got to name it and you got to face it and you got to replace the darkness with light, with something bigger than the loss. As a way to honor your loved one, to serve your loved one, this is about honor and service and duty to your loved one. It doesn't diminish the loss and it doesn't diminish them. It expands them. Love only expands. It doesn't contrast. It's not a zero-sum game, right? If you start loving another animal, it doesn't mean you loved your dog that died any less. It just means you're taking that love and you're continuing it on. The same is true with all of the dark deeds. What was lost in it or who was lost in it, they aren't lost. They're still there. Right? Your loved one is still alive, not in physical body, but love doesn't die. They don't die. Their story doesn't die. Another conversation for another day. You got to get to this place when you can think bigger than the loss. It's not about surviving. It's a starting point. And if you're in the darkness, survive. Hold on. Keep putting one foot in front of the other. But there will come a point when surviving is no longer enough. And it's not enough for you. It's not enough for your loved one. You owe it to them. You owe it to yourself. You owe it to those around you. You owe it to those who come after you to replace the loss with something found that's greater. And so this is the formula, the tools of name it, face it, replace it. I promise you that if you apply these to the darkness when it descends, however it descends, wherever it descends, whenever it descends in your life, you will learn to not only survive, but to thrive. You will honor the loss. You will honor those who came before you. You will serve those who are around you, and you will inspire those who come after you, who follow in your footsteps. This is what it means to live a soul-centered life. This is the work I do in my own life when the darkness descends or when it's around me. And this is the work I do with clients, helping them transform any type of darkness into all types of light. I work with clients around loss, all types of loss, from loss of identity, shifting into the sunset era of life, the sunset chapter within the afternoon, working with folks who are shifting from morning into the afternoon, who are in afternoon and not finding meaning and purpose in their life. They've lost that purpose. Professionals who've lost the connection to their business, their work, helping them translate it back into a calling. So around loss, around life, all of these issues around life and legacy. Because at the end of the day, this is about legacy. The legacy, not just that we leave, but that we're living while we're here, designing our legacy by living our life purposefully and proactively and powerfully. And that's the work I do, and I would love to work with you. Shoot me an email, rabbib@mysoulcentered.org or rabbib@rabbib.com. You can check us out at www.mysoulcentered.org. And Arielle and I would love to hear from you, to work with you, and to continue for you to tune in to the Soul Centered podcast so that we can get to know each other and walk down this path, each and every one of us, transforming the afternoon of life into the most important and inspiring and impactful time of our life. Take care. Salam, shalom, namaste, and peace.